Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
Piffles Podcast, we're here and we are going to talk Art Briles for a little bit. And right off the bat, I want to say that this whole situation is completely screwed up and it pisses me off that this was even a thing. For Hamilton to go ahead and think that hiring a guy who covered up rapes and multiple rapes, gang rapes, is absolutely disgusting. There's absolutely no place for it. And it's I have so many words I could say about it, but I don't think any of them would make it to air because there's a lot of anger in that. And I just don't understand why Hamilton could think that bringing in a guy with Art Briles' background is a good idea. It's something that should never, ever be done in our league. I'm glad it didn't end up happening, as we found out. But the fact that it took 10 hours for the league to react and step in really grinds my gears. Art Briles, if you don't know, like I said, covered up a bunch of rapes while he was the head coach of Baylor University a few years ago. And this is something that took place over the course of years. It wasn't just all like one incident. And he was dismissed from Baylor University, rightfully so. He was never formally charged with anything. But the fact is, the guy should be in jail. I'm glad Art Briles isn't a part of the CFL right now, but it's a severe black eye on the league, not just Hamilton. I can only imagine what Hamilton fans are going through, because if something like this happened to the Riders, I might be completely done with them. I don't know how you can support a team that thinks that it's okay. They said that they talked to a whole bunch of people, that they talked to women's shelters, and the women's shelters thought it was okay and it was appropriate to sign Art Briles, which is completely BS. There's absolutely no way a woman's shelter would agree on that. Zero chance.
Can I just say, for the fact that if they were in, like, they were going to hire him, all right, fine, whatever. But if they were asking women's shelters about it, hey, is it okay if we hire this guy? Why would any professional football team ask a woman's shelter if it's okay to hire a guy?
Right there, that's an instant red flag.
Like, if the woman's shelter is the one that you're going to ask permission and say, hey, this all right? Probably it's not.
If you need to ask the question, you probably shouldn't be asking it to begin with.
And if you have to ask more than one person, and you have to ask 12, like they said that they had to ask, and they all thought it was a good idea? No, that's not a good idea. I don't know how you totally just disregard fan backlash and just think that it's going to get swept under the rug, that nobody's going to know who this guy is and you're going to bring him in. No, they totally misjudged that, didn't even think about it. And the fans are the people who pay all of the contracts. We pay it with our money, with our merch spending, by going to games. And to think that it's okay.
I think they knew there was going to be backlash. I don't think they realized the amount of fervor that the announcement would have that came with it. And they've kind of admitted that. They basically said, we knew there was going to be some backlash. They didn't expect ESPN. They didn't expect Sports Illustrated. They didn't expect Washington Post. They did not expect fans writing in, radio, TV. They did not expect this would resonate the way it did. And with that, they had to backtrack. They thought, there's going to be some ticked off people and then they'll move on. This is a they saw this as a football decision that, hey, winning solves everything, and usually it does. But this entire situation is mind-boggling how tone-deaf it was. And the apologies that came after were even worse, because they apologized that they upset people. Not that what they did was wrong. We're sorry we hurt your feelings was basically what they were saying. And it's a total black eye for the league, especially after all the good publicity they had. And I got to admit, I'm a little sour at the league, too, with the way it was handled. Why did it take 10 hours for the league to come out with anything? You're saying, oh, yeah, we're talking to the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Supposedly, the league was in the loop, if you believe the Tiger Cats. So another story came out today. I saw that Ambrosi was aware and he was fine with it until the media backlash. And if that's the case, That's mind-blowing. And the excuse they're using is because he doesn't have the ability to handle sideline contracts. If that's the case, how could Orich have the power to limit to where coaches can play? Obviously, there's something in there where the commissioner has some power to that. I don't think we're being told the whole story, and that sucks.
The thing about those apologies, though, is it wasn't genuine. It was more of a, oh, crap, sorry we got caught. You know what I mean?
Definitely, and what was worse, though, is you had Scott Mitchell out there, and he's digging himself a deeper hole. He thinks the best way to get out of the hole is just to keep on digging until you're out of it.
I watched that, press conference, whatever it was. I texted Alex. I said, this guy seems like a major douchebag. Yeah, I watched it and I said, oh my God, Alex, he is such a douchebag. Like, just the things that he was saying. Like, how does he have a job that he is allowed to be in front of a microphone and talk to people, like lots of people, not just a person? Like, I'm talking to like four people right now, but... ugh, it hurt my head.
Right now, I want to take my rant in a bit of a different direction. Obviously, like the rest of you, I was disgusted that this is even a story, that this was a thing. I could go on about the actual signing of Art Briles and who allowed it and what it means, and I would end up like Alex. Most of it would be cut with foul language. I'm not going to go there. I'm actually pissed off at the colossal asshats that think it's even remotely acceptable to attack the women in the CFL head office just because they chose, or more likely were told, not to speak out following Briles' hiring on Monday. Who the hell are these people to tell a person when she should or should not speak out? I'm sorry, but the CFL, the women in the CFL, their lack of immediate social media response does not for a single second suggest that they agree with the hiring. It doesn't for a single second suggests that they don't feel for sexual assault victims in a situation like this. It doesn't say anything about them other than they chose or were told not to respond to a topic that the CFL community, or that had the CFL community in pitchfork mode. So I actually want to end my bit of the rant by saying thank you to the women of the CFL for the amazing job that they do in our league. You guys don't owe anybody anything. Keep doing the amazing things you're doing to help run the league that we all love.
What really bugged me about that was people getting mad at Brody Lawson, Christina Litz. That's not their job to handle. To me, it has nothing to do with them being female and not speaking out. That's not their job.
They have nothing to do with the hiring of coaches. They have nothing to do with coaching at all. They are not the CFL. They work for the CFL.
What I've been seeing is people are complaining that because they're women, they should have automatically spoken out, and that's garbage.
You know what? That's bullcrap, though, because I'm not mad about this guy because I'm a woman. I'm mad about him because I'm a human. Like, I don't care if it was women getting raped by men or men getting raped by women. You don't know about a rape, several of them, and not tell somebody. I've been a manager employer for 16 years, and you better believe if I knew that one of my staff did some crap like that, I would be on the horn to the police in a second.
And you'd think any decent human being would do exactly that.
Right.
But the problem is, and we've seen this, is college football is all about winning, and he put winning above human decency.
It's a game.
And that's what we don't need in this league, especially on the edge of the diversity is strength. I mean, you're wearing one of the shirts right now. On the end of this great campaign that got us all sorts of positive PR and made us look like the great league that we usually are. And instead, now we're the league that hires a rape enabler. And that pisses me off because it's a huge black mark.
I like the people that were saying, well, what about a second chance? Your second chance was the first time that a rape accusation came to you and said, hey, one of your players did that. That was your second chance. You cover up one? I can understand being in his position as a coach and someone come up to you and say, your player did this. Well, I think I know that player. Give him the benefit of the doubt. You're probably going to side with him, and I totally understand that. And I think that's kind of human nature to want to say, no, there's no way. This is a good kid. They wouldn't do something like that. But when it comes up a second time too, even before the second time, that first time, you can't just brush it off. You have to investigate that because that's a serious allegation and people just don't make that up for no reason. Like, there has to be something there. And if it comes again, okay, well, maybe I need to look at this further. And when it gets to 50, I don't understand how you can ever defend somebody sweeping 50 rapes under the rug.
See, here's the thing. I could get it very loosely. I could get it if it was his own kid. Like, that's his son. He doesn't want his son to go to prison. All right. It's stupid. Still very stupid, but I can get it. But these are just kids on a football team. Sure, he's their coach, whatever. They're close. Yeah, fine. But he put these women's lives, their future, all of that beneath winning a football game.
And we're not just talking about, you know, two or three players. There's reports of upwards of 30 players over a four-year period. That's a culture. That is no longer a one-off. That's a culture that allows that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Why would we want that in the CFL?
I looked at the timeline of all the allegations on Wikipedia, how true it is, whatever. I don't know, but I scrolled for several scrolls on my phone. Just pages and pages and pages of allegations.
The last number I saw was over 30 players and 50 plus sexual assaults.
It makes me sick.
And that's the ones that are reported. That's the ones that have come forward.
And how many weren't?
Yeah, that's
we know that number is substantially higher. The majority of sexual assaults go unreported because of what we're seeing with this. Because it's okay. Like, that just...
For college football. Embarrassing. This whole thing. It's embarrassing.
I don't know why you would want to have somebody on your team work for you, for your company, with that kind of moral compass.
They looked at it
like
as...
lack of moral compass.
Lack of moral compass, yes. Hell of a football coach. And that's all they saw, was this guy can win football games.
They saw exactly what Baylor saw.
Yeah, so he obviously is okay with shoving stuff under the rug. What kind of crap is he going to let his team now get away with? You have to assume that he's gonna. Like, they're going to try. Like, they know. They know what he did, or didn't do, rather.
The professional culture is a lot different than Texas football university.
That's fair, but, like, not big stuff, but, like, little crap. Little, oh, we stayed out past curfew. He doesn't care. Whatever. But he's not going to tell anybody.
No, I think we saw a lot about the Ticats' new head coach in a weekend. And the future of that franchise scares me now.
We were given a lot of crap as Rider fans last year with Chris Jones and his fines, and who do anything to win, including, you know, signing Khalif Mitchell, breaking roster rules and whatever. But not saying that none of those are important, because they are. But they're minor compared to what this was.
And I think an aspect that we're going to talk about later, sounds like they were doing this to ensure that Johnny Football was going to be in a Ticat uniform. And that's what it's about. They wanted the pub, they want this all-star cast of coaching staff, and they, like I said, put football above morals.
Well, they got the publicity.
Yeah, I'd say so.
And I reached out to, I'll be honest, I mentioned the CFL on Twitter when I had my disdain for this the other day, and I did send a message to the people that run the CFL account, and I apologized that they shouldn't have gotten the backlash half of it, because like a guy like Max that runs the CFL account, that has nothing to do with him. But unfortunately, that's one of those, you're in the PR business, you do have to face it. So I do apologize that Max shouldn't have seen all that. I know he sent me a message back, said it was a really tough day, and understandably so. So I want to apologize to the league itself for the amount of hate that was directed their way, when it really wasn't those people specifically that should have had to deal with it.
No, and in the end, the CFL did the right thing. Good for them. I appreciate it.
I give them partial credit.
It shouldn't have gotten that far in the first place.
Not even close.
No.
Once they heard that that contract was going to be registered, and if they even talked to Randy Ambrosi, which I don't believe they did, I think Hamilton's lying about that, for being completely honest. But once they found wind of that, they know who Art Briles is. They should have put the kibosh on that right away. If they knew about it.
It shocks me how many people apparently okayed this down the line. I mean, June Jones, Scott Mitchell, Bob Young, obviously, you know, Kent Austin, Eric Tillman, they would have all had to sign off on this at some point. If the contact with the league, I mean, we're talking about how many people thought this would be an okay decision.
It's an absolute joke.
Mm-hmm. I do have to say, though, kudos to the CFL community, the fans. I don't think we can get fans to agree on 95% of anything. And I put up a poll saying, should the league step in? And the vote ended up 95-5 or 94-6, something in that round. I mean, kudos to fans for at least understanding what's wrong and what's right.
Well, I'm pretty sure 8 of 9 teams hate Chris Jones.
That's still not 95%.
Well, although some of Rider Nation.
Right, there you go.
Yeah, it might get us there.
Well, not anymore. We're 4-4 now.
Anyway, I'm done with Art Briles.
So is the CFL thing good?
Well, and the sad thing is, I don't know how hard it's going to be for them to just flip a switch because they still have a game to play on Monday, and that's going to be a vile crowd in Hamilton, and that'll be something to see. And I feel bad for the players especially, because they're probably going to get a lot of comments thrown towards them by fans that they don't deserve, because the players have absolutely zero to do with it. So I feel bad for the reaction that they may or may not get.
And I've seen a lot of fans going, like, they want to go to a game, they want to be there to support the players that had nothing to do with the decision, but they don't know if they can wear their tie cat colors. Wear teal. That's my suggestion. Wear teal.
That'll go great when they're playing the Argos.
Yeah, there you go.
That'll be quite the statement.
Well, teal is the color, so.
Well, time for them to move on from Art Briles, and time for us to move on as well.
Happier thoughts.
We're drinking town with a football problem.
Hey, everybody, here on the Piffles Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Alex.
I'm Steve.
I'm Greg.
I'm Amy.
And Ferlin is sans here, not here today. He's feeling under the weather, so Ferlin will not be here. But give him a follow on Twitter, at Fernie635. Follow all of us as well. Follow our Piffles account at Piffles Pod. Follow me at RealAlexD.
Follow me at Safamod.
Follow me at Greg on Sports.
And I'm at CFL Huddyball.
Make sure you like us on Facebook, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. We're on Instagram. Just search Piffles Pod. And make sure you check out the website, PifflesPodcast.com. As always, Piffles Podcast is brought to you by Bryn Werrett at Royal LePage Regina Realty. Check out BrynWerrett.com. That's BrynWerrett. Coming up in this week's show, we're going to recap that Riders 54-31 dominating win over Edmonton in Edmonton.
It's like the Eskimos were sans here.
they were the Ferlin last week of the CFL.
Nipa? Edmonton Nipa?
And Riders moving their record up to 4-4. We're going to preview the Riders versus Bombers Labor Day Classic. This is when the season really starts, according to some people, and this is when the football gets fun, a little bit more fun. And that's coming up on Sunday afternoon, so we're going to take a look at that game here. We'll have an entrance into the Hottie Bowl. We'll have our Coney Island Poutine Cafe Piffles player profile, engaging with the enemy, and as of course, we'll have our Piffles picks. So right down to business, how about that game on Friday night? The Riders winning 54-31 in Edmonton. Somebody tells me that 54-31 is the final score in Edmonton. The Riders are the ones with 31 points. And even then, that was lucky. Riders moving to 4-4, dropping Edmonton back-to-back losses down to 7-2, making things pretty interesting in the West.
Let's be real. That score absolutely flattered the Eskimos.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen a team dominate all three aspects of a game like that all season. That was, well, maybe Calgary and Hamilton, but that was Hamilton.
I mean, that game doesn't count.
I mean, they controlled everything about that game.
It was a perfect game by the Riders. I haven't seen the Riders play like that in Edmonton in years. Like, that was beautiful football to watch.
when do you ever see the Riders get 37 points off turnovers? Two weeks ago, we didn't have a single, or I guess 2 games ago, we didn't have a single interception by a defensive back. We had 2 pick sixes. Ed Gainey could have had 3 more picks. Who are these guys?
It was phenomenal.
Yeah, what's with Gainey's ball hawking? Does he need another vehicle? What's going on there? He's been all around the ball. I don't know if that shade that Jones threw at him, but he could be a better player. He's not playing up to his potential, but he has been all over the field. It's good to see.
So, who looked good? I know, kind of a dumb question, but who stood out?
He may not show up as much as he usually does on the stat sheet, but I got to give a shout out to Daron Carter. That return 2-point convert, 150 yards for 2 points.
That was a hell of a long way to run for 2 points.
That was a momentum changer.
How about that block by Nick James on that, getting the, you know, breaking through the line, getting a hand up there? That was great.
Actually, I was going to say Nick James, he, what a beast he is. He on that Willie Jefferson on that punt block. Nick James was the guy rumbling up the field trying to hit the kicker so Jefferson could get the scoop and score. Like, that was awesome.
If you want to say who looked good, we could throw it to Nam and Roosevelt. Another 100 plus yard game. Our D line as a whole. And the biggest thing, the reason our D line looks good, not to give any, you know, negative shout out to the D line before, but it's Nick James. We are getting constant pressure up the middle.
And that's allowing guys like Toby Antigua and Willie Jefferson to get one-on-ones on the outside. If you're getting Willie Jefferson one-on-one with the way that he's playing this year, you're not going to stop him. I don't care what offensive lineman you are.
Hugh O'Neill saw that.
He's been an absolute monster this year, and he's getting even more chances to make plays with Nick James in the middle.
And once again, that offensive line, as much as we want to say we hate that ratio, I want to see it all year.
If those are the results, I'm 100% on board.
So you're saying the pride is back?
You know, I'm eating a little bit more crow each and every week, because I definitely did not expect this game to go that way. If anybody's going to get blown out in Edmonton, it would be the Riders. And I fully thought that was going to happen. Edmonton was also right for the picking with all the injuries. Eventually, that was going to catch up to them, and it did. Now, I'm not trying to take any credit away from the Riders, because they absolutely earned that dominating victory. So kudos to them for absolutely kicking ass, which is great. I want to see this against Winnipeg. So not just on Labor Day. I think Labor Day will be a close game. I want to see something at the Banjo Bowl, like a real statement. Because Labor Day, you throw records out the window. Except for last year, like, it doesn't matter what the team's records are, the Riders are going to win. Like, it's almost a foregone conclusion that the Riders win Labor Day. I want to see it at the Banjo Bowl.
So the Riders beat BC. You want to see how they do against Edmonton. Riders beat Edmonton. You want to see how they do 2 weeks from now against Winnipeg.
And after that, I'll probably say I want to see what they can do against Calgary. And
just accept right your that. Little plate of crow.
Oh, I haven't bought my tickets to the all-you-can-eat crow buffet yet. I'm not quite there, but I had another little snack on the side.
I think we can all agree the biggest change from 3 weeks ago before the BC game until now is the D-line getting pressure gives us a chance with our defensive backs to actually cover guys for the, you know, 3 to 4 seconds.
And you know who's looked really, really good and has been very underrated and probably doesn't get the credit he deserves because he ran into a goalpost? Crezdon Butler. He's playing halfback, which is a really tough position in the CFL to play because you're going against these big slot receivers. He's looked really good. Other than, I mean, let's be honest here, that Brian Burnham pick, that was a great pick. In BC, where he got Crezdon to run into the goalpost. He's been great, other than that one play. And even then, I can't really fault him because BC used a prop, essentially. He's been fantastic. So he's kind of my little unsung hero. I thought he's been great.
He was getting a lot of flack after that BC game, but you're absolutely right. And again, to me, it all comes down to them having the confidence to not have to cover a guy for, you know, 5, 6, 7 seconds while the quarterback's just standing back having a nap. We're getting pressure. They can actually make plays.
There had to have been somebody from that game who looked bad. Did anybody look bad?
Daron Carter needs to know how to tackle if he's going to keep on playing cornerback.
I still love having him back there, though. That's great.
You could tell Franklin was picking at him the entire time. Every ball after he realized Carter was out there was thrown at Carter. So it was just a matter of if Carter's going to play that, he has to just go for the ball constantly because he obviously can't tackle.
And it'll be interesting to see what happens if Casey Rogers can't go this week, if they bring A.J. Jefferson on the roster to take his spot. A.J. Jefferson is playing?
He was at practice today.
Good to know.
Although so was Casey Rogers. But, yeah.
I think that might be a... That'll be a better option than Daron Carter for a full game at corner.
It's fun to watch, but yeah, I was every time he went down to try to tackle, I was like, he's going to hurt himself, and then what?
Well, and luckily, each time we've actually seen him in there, the game's been, there's been no doubt in the game. The home game against BC, we were up by 30 points by the time he got in. This game against Edmonton, we were up 40 points by the time he got in.
And him and Gainey ran into each other again trying to go for a ball. Like,
just give him one pick. Yeah. Come on, Gainey.
Yeah. Yeah.
One.
You don't need another vehicle that bad. Let Carter get an interception, and then he can move on.
And I'm sorry, speaking of Daron Carter, I got to go back to who looked good during the game. Can I give a shout-out to the Rider celebrations?
Yeah. They have three more planned for this week,
apparently. It was four.
Is it four now?
Yeah.
I saw that they have more planned.
And you know what? They remind me a lot of the... Was it the early 2000s stamps where they had Nick Lewis and Kenyon Rambo and
Elijah Thurman?
Right. And they were doing like the bicycle and the bobsled and the relay.
Those were great.
The bobsled's still my favorite.
I think I'm into the bicycle.
Yeah, the bicycle has a little bit more skill to that. Like, that's pretty, like, you have to practice that. A bobsled, you can be like, hey guys, let's score. We're going to do a bobsled. And people will just jump and do it. Right. Like,
or people stand behind each other and.
And I'm not going to give any hints away, but when we were at practice last week, the Rider receivers were doing a celebration. I hope they use it in game, and if they do, I will make sure and shout out that that's the one it was. But if they use, like, they're doing full choreographed celebrations, and it tells me that the team is relaxed, having fun, and that can only mean good things. And to the people that say, you know, just hand the ball off like they've been there before, this is entertainment. It's fun,
right?
These are the guys you say. You don't sign Daron Carter because he's just, I mean, you do because he's good at football, but you sign him because he's an emotional guy. You make him shut off that emotion, and what's going to happen?
He shuts his game down.
Yeah.
So let him.
And
let him go.
You can't have that.
And we've got a bunch of them. You can see it. Roosevelt, Bakari Grant, Daron Carter, they're all in there. They're all having a blast. The Snowbird celebration, that was funny.
Rob Bagg even was doing them.
Right? Like,
and he's a cranky old man.
Like, these are fantastic, and I can't wait to see what they've got planned because, you know, even as a Rider fan, when the Stamps were doing it, it almost wanted me to see, made me want to see Stampeder touchdowns just to see what the heck they would come up with.
How many people tuned into Philadelphia Eagles / Dallas Cowboy games when Terrell Owens was on the team? And how many people tuned into Ocho Cinco in Cincinnati? People tuned into that to see what they would do. This sells tickets.
Oh, man.
This will sell the game to the younger generation, whether you like it or not. That's what the younger generation likes. They want to see fun.
I'm going to throw this out there right now. If any of the Rider receivers hear this, you score a touchdown in the north end zone, come see me. I will get you some popcorn. I want to see the popcorn celebration.
Steve's got his popcorn ready.
Let's do it.
Entire game. Steve is holding onto a popcorn. Can't eat it. Got to hold the popcorn. Might need it.
I hope some of the Rider receivers are listening to our show. That would make me happy.
Look for the scary-looking dude in the end zone.
You cannot miss us.
No. And Steve's behind him.
Yeah.
Beside him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, one other question to get to about this game that I have for you guys. This is the first road win the Riders have had against a Western Division team since the Banjo Bowl of 2014. Is this the real turnaround we've been waiting for the last 2 years?
Yes.
Definitely.
Yes.
You don't play a game like that where you control all three facets the way the Riders did, regardless of how injured your team is, if you're not starting to turn that corner. Not to say we're a 16-2 team or anything like that.
Of course not. We're going to be 14-4.
Right? But we're seeing that turnaround. We're seeing the skill and the Chris Jones defense, you know, that we've been dying to see since the beginning of last year. So yes, unequivocally yes.
Definitely. Players are flying around. Receivers are open. Glenn's getting time. Like, this, you don't put all this together by accident. You can have one or two games where you're going to win and, like, oh, that was a tough win, and that shows we got there. No, when you're blowing away teams in your own division, you have finally taken that step. Just a matter of keeping it rolling. Yes, is Calgary the measuring stick in this league? Of course they are. Fortunately, we got Winnipeg twice. I think at least a split. I would love to see both games. One. And then Hamilton. And then we'll see what we got against Calgary.
I'll be completely honest. Nothing about Winnipeg scares me right now. The team that scare me is Calgary, and we got to play them twice. Winnipeg, good team, feasting on the East.
They beat Edmonton too, though.
Not like we did.
Well, that's true.
Didn't they go to like overtime? That was 33-26.
No, that game wasn't overtime. It was close, though.
It was the Montreal game that went to overtime. Yep. And
we still got six teams against the East, too. We still haven't played Ottawa. No. Ottawa twice. Hamilton. Toronto.
Montreal.
Montreal. Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry. We got five teams. Sorry. We still got five teams against the East. And you'd think pick up most of those. And then Edmonton again. Like I said, Winnipeg twice. Calgary twice.
What record gets you into the playoffs? Do you think 9-9, 10-8? Given how bad the East is and how good the West is, of course.
With a tiebreaker and the way that BC's playing right now, I think 9-9 gets you in.
I think 9-9 might be short in the West. I think the it would be better than second place in the East, but I don't think it's going to matter.
You think 9-9 will be fifth place in the West?
I think so.
See, and I would agree with you until I disagree with you as long as BC continues to stumble, and they look bad right now.
You know what they're missing? They're missing Adam Big Hill on their defense. Their offense obviously is a little bit in shambles when Jennings, he's obviously not ready to go. Lule's looked fantastic for him every time he's come in, except for, you know, throwing up a duck interception here in Regina. But they're missing something. They're missing the passion on the defense. They still have El Mimian, who brings that as well, but there's no team 100 right now, and they're missing El Mimian, and they're missing Big Hill.
And that's exactly it. There's something that's not there, that, and they kind of played off it for the first little bit, but I think they fall back a little bit, and I think it's between the Riders and BC for that 9-9. You might be right, you might need 10-8, but if that's the record you need to make the playoffs, five games against the West or against the East, you got two against Winnipeg.
I'm not saying 9-9 won't let the Riders make the playoffs. It's very possible. I don't think a team in the West is going to have less than 9-9. And if we have 9-9, we have the tiebreaker on the Lions. So
and soon to be the Bombers.
We're well on our way to winning three tiebreakers, hopefully. That'll come up huge. Moving on to the Labor Day game. Just ahead of that, the Riders made some roster moves on Tuesday and Wednesday. The Riders have signed national linebacker Bo Landry, formerly of Hamilton and Calgary. If you don't remember who he has a big, giant hair, like lots and lots of hair, curly hair. Amy, you're probably going to be jealous of his hair. And also kicker Brett Lothar. He was actually a Rider. Once a Rider, always a Rider now. He was with the Riders September 3rd to October 8th, 2015. Didn't actually play for the Riders, but he was there just in case Paul McCallum got injured.
So he's the new Johnny Mark? We just signed a kicker just in case?
Yep.
All right.
Which tells me that Quinn Van Gilswick's injury is a little bit more serious than they thought.
Yeah, they put him on the sixth game, so that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, so just having a contingency plan in place.
You say put him on the sixth game like that means anything to Chris Jones.
Oh, yeah. Well, you might as well just put everybody who's injured on the sixth game list. Because there's no repercussions now to bringing people off.
Well, yes, there is.
Well,
and that's actually, I'm starting to worry about that. If they're going to keep on doing this, they're going to be in serious cap trouble by the end of the year.
But if you bring them back.
Exactly, though, before the sixth game. And they've pulled everyone off early so far except for Owens.
But it's no different
Ivan
than
Brown
if you put
says
them
low.
Oh, yeah.
But the only there's no difference between that and having them on the one-game injured list.
True.
It's exactly the same thing. You still have the same roster spots. The only difference is with the sixth game, if you hold them there, you get the cap cut. That's the issue with the new setup. Is
And that also tells me that they're actually in pretty good cap space, that there's quite a bit of room there. And, I mean, looking at what we're paying our quarterbacks right now, we're not having a $500,000 quarterback. And
do all of our quarterbacks combined make $500,000?
I don't think so.
I think all of our quarterbacks make less than Darian Trent right now, I believe, is what I read.
Sweet. It's a moderately successful cap.
And the Riders also signed international defensive lineman Tavares Bingham. Don't know if there's a relation to our friend Xavian, but not the Bingham we thought we'd be bringing back.
No, actually, Xavier comment. Someone asked him that today on Twitter. No relation. However, they did play football together.
Interesting.
At one point. Oh, so cool. They're brothers of a different kind.
And Justin Dunk just reporting on Wednesday night here that the Riders were apparently in trade discussions with Hamilton for Zach Collaros. Apparently the Argos have made a better offer, kind of pushing the Riders out of the running. Nothing's agreed to yet, obviously. Really quick, first takes. Good? Bad?
No.
Why?
Because Collaros isn't the quarterback he was 2 years ago. Period.
He's playing hurt and scared, same thing that happened to Drew Willey. Except he was a better quarterback than Drew Willey was and is.
We don't need a $500,000 scared quarterback, regardless of where he belongs on the Hottie Bowl. Sorry, Amy.
I was just going to say he'd make the sidelines look a lot better.
I could take my Durant jersey and take the Durant name off and put Collaros on.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah.
Just do it with duct tape. Yeah. So everybody knows you did it.
The old painter's green tape across the back.
And I agree with you, Craig, saying that he's scared, and I totally see that now. He's not what he used to be coming off that ACL injury. I say no because his last 12 games, he's 0-12. I know quarterback wins are a skewed number, but the fact is the guy hasn't won in almost a calendar year. No thanks.
And if they were losing but he was playing great, I could at least see it. If there was something that made you think, maybe. But
there's nothing. That's,
and he's the highest played player in the CFL right now.
And he just got bumped from Mazzoli. So,
yeah,
no.
There's absolutely no reason for him to be anywhere close to the Riders right now. Vernon Adams, we're seeing right now. He's the only quarterback we have right now under contract next year.
Williams,
yeah.
Williams.
Practice roster, though.
If he gets pushed to the
practice roster.
Sorry, he's on the practice roster now.
Then you just...
Yeah. Yeah, you're right, sorry.
So Vernon Adams is the only one that's guaranteed right now to be on the roster next year. That doesn't have an option year coming up. So, and Vernon Adams is 24 years old. Collaros is what, 30? Is he 30 now?
29.
So next year he'd be 30. And we just went through this with quarterbacks already. We don't want a 30-year-old plus quarterback for the future. Kevin Glenn, we all know, is a stopgap. We got rid of Darian Durant because he's 34 years old and not a Chris Jones guy. Vernon Adams is 24. Brandon Bridge is, what, 25? 24 as well, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Those guys are the future of this team, and they have to go forward with those guys. Now, to the actual game itself, Labor Day Classic. The best game on the calendar. How do the Riders stop Winnipeg?
To me, it's very, very, very simple. You stop Andrew Harris.
Which brings me to my next question. Can they do that, and how?
You can't stop Andrew Harris. You limit Andrew Harris. He is, right now, in my opinion, the best all-around player in the CFL. He brings the biggest difference to a team. He's scary, the way he's playing.
He's probably the closest thing that the CFL's come to since John Cornish to possibly win most outstanding player and most outstanding Canadian. Like, he is playing on a different level right now.
Was it last week he had 100 rushing yards and 100 receiving yards?
He's on pace right now to be the first CFL player ever to have 1,000 yards rushing and 1,000 yards receiving in the same season. Closest was Robert Drummond back in 97, I think it was, with the Argos. He had 1,000 or just over 1,000 yards receiving, had 800 and some odd rushing, which in the CFL is an absolute insane amount of production from a running back. So, like, it's been done, what, twice in the NFL? Marshall Faulk and Roger Craig?
Yep.
Like, it's that's not something you see all the time. Even with two extra games in the CFL, that's still a really, really impressive stat. And he's having one hell of a year.
If he stays healthy, he, in my opinion, there's no doubt he gets 1,000 and 1,000. The way he's playing right now.
But that's always kind of been the nick on him, is he gets nicked up easily, usually. This year he's been managing to stay healthy, and hopefully that continues. As much as I hate to say this, it's been kind of fun to watch. Shut up, Winnipeg.
Hope it's not fun for the next two weeks. But again, it comes back to what went well last last week versus Edmonton, if our D-line can hold and get that push up the middle, force them to start throwing the ball a little more, I think that's the key. That's how you stop Andrew Harris, and that's how you stop the Bombers.
Riders back-to-back incredible games by both offense and defense. Even though they gave up 31 points last week, let's be honest, they really only gave up 15 last week.
They really only gave up 8, if you ask me. Punt, fumble thing that happened. And
yeah.
Two garbage touchdowns, but anyways.
But also the Bombers, 5 straight wins, 4 straight wins. I'll have to look and see what it is and cut out which one's wrong. But the Bombers are on a nice streak here, and they have all the momentum going on right now. And they won last year's Labor Day, so that's going to be thought in there. They've already come to Mosaic Stadium here and won this season, ruined the stadium opener. Which team keeps their momentum going?
I hope and I pray, because Lord knows my Twitter feed will probably explode and my text messages. The Riders cannot lose the home opener and Labor Day to the Bombers this year. It's going to be Riders. It's got to be. Like, if they can't get up for this game, especially the way they've been playing and the expectations that go into Labor Day, whether they're conflated or not, I don't know what else. Like, this is usually, what was it, 2012 was the 7-2 Bombers come in and got destroyed by the 2-7 Riders. Like, Labor Day is usually a funny game, but I don't see how the Riders don't keep rolling.
See, and I'm thinking at it a little differently. Yes, they're on a good winning streak, but I said it before and I'll say it again. The Blue Bombers do not scare me right now. We're talking about a team that barely beat Montreal. Yes, I know we lost to Montreal, but that was the beginning of the year. They beat them by 1 point and once in overtime. They beat the Toronto Argonauts. They lost to BC. They barely beat Ottawa while they were reeling. I mean, they're winning, yes, and in the end, that's what matters. I mean, they're 7-2 for a reason. But they're not winning in a way that really strikes fear to me. I know a lot of people, are, and me included, have put them up number 2 in the power rankings, and it's simply because they're winning. But a lot of things have to go right lately for them to be pulling out these wins, and those bounces have to stop.
You can say the same thing about the Calgary Stampeders. Other than their one game against Hamilton, they haven't looked like world beaters.
That's one thing I noticed this year, this season especially. Like, the CFL, especially the West, has usually been a tight race, especially through the top four. And then usually last couple seasons, the Riders have been the thanks for coming out. But I could see any team, maybe except for the Lions right now, winning the West.
Right now, it's a total crapshoot. There's so much parity right now, and that's great for the league. We just got to get that out in the East.
Yeah, the East needs to pick up their socks.
And I will just finish this off really quick by saying I think both teams keep momentum. Way to sit on the fence, Alex. The Riders will win and keep their momentum going, but I think Winnipeg plays a really good game. It's going to be a really tight, close game, and it's going to be a good football game. Both teams are going to come out of it saying, we didn't play bad.
The home opener went to double overtime. Like, how much tighter could that game have gotten? And that game should have been a tie, at least.
Yeah.
Could you be any more in the middle of the fence?
I'm sure I could.
Predict a tie.
Yeah, maybe.
Both winning streaks continue.
We have our Piffles picks to come, so maybe. Now, let's move on here. Let's continue our talk on the Blue Bombers by talking to one. Time now for Engaging with the Enemy. Joining us this week from the Winnipeg Blue Bombers is fullback John Rush. John, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Now, how are you enjoying your time in the CFL so far?
It's been pretty amazing, to say the least, to finally kind of reach that dream you've had since you were 9 years old. It's been pretty surreal. So, yeah, it's been pretty amazing.
Your career just begun, but so far, what would you say has been the high point of it?
Probably high point. I'd say just making the Winnipeg Blue Bombers team, because they have such a veteran team, such a tight knit group of guys, and just making a team and being part of the team with like these guys, with Matt Nichols, Andrew Harris, and stuff like that. is definitely the high point of my career so far, which has been like far and above beyond like my biggest dream. So I'm pretty excited about it.
Now, you've already been to Regina for the Mosaic Stadium opener. It's going to be your first Labor Day game. It's not really anything I imagine you've seen before. What are you expecting when you get to Regina this weekend?
I've heard some pretty crazy stories so far. I was there for the first game, and you know the fans were loud, and the stadium was state of the art and all that. But apparently they turned it up with another notch at this game. So I'm excited to see all the watermelons and all that stuff, and the parties on the street the day before the game are apparently pretty crazy to watch from our hotel rooms and stuff like that. So I'm just expecting a really exciting environment to be in, I guess.
Now, who or what inspired you to become a pro football player?
I guess that would probably be my dad. He played a huge influence and role in my life, and really told me from a young age I could do whatever I wanted to do as long as I put my mind to it. And he was, he was a football player back in high school, and kind of I always wanted to be exactly like him. And then my brother got into football as well, so probably them too. And I remember, a long time ago seeing a ridiculous commercial of a running back doing a front flip over over a defender. And, looking back on it, that's probably fake. But at the time, I thought it was the coolest thing ever. So that probably had a little bit of an influence on my football career as well.
And what's John Rush like outside of football?
Honestly, I'm pretty easy going. I just like to relax with the guys, just watch the movies, and not do too much. But I'm pretty into fishing, which has been rekindled out in Winnipeg, which has been nice because out in the Toronto area, it's not the best fishing around. But yeah, it's been nice to get back into that. And but other than that, no, I just like to hang out and just hang out with the guys and be around the guys, because that's it's one of the best parts of the camaraderie around football. So just hang out mostly.
So if you weren't a football player, what would John Rush be doing?
Ooh, that's a tough question. I battled a lot with that my entire life, trying to figure out, what I wanted to do, what school I wanted to go to do it and stuff like that. So growing up, I always wanted to be a vet. I'm super passionate about animals, specifically dogs. Huge passion for them, just love every aspect of them. But I kind of quickly realized that I would think I would be very upset and just sad doing that. So definitely that was off the table pretty quick. But I think I would really enjoy flying planes. My dad was a pilot when he was younger, and he flew small planes, and I've flown in some small planes with him. But I think being a pilot and, just getting to travel all over the world and seeing the world from 30,000 feet would be pretty amazing. So it's something that most people wouldn't really get to experience, and I think that would be a pretty amazing thing to do.
Just so you know, you earned some brownie points liking dogs.
That's good.
So I hear you don't like the bottoms of bananas. What's that about?
Okay. Have you ever looked at them? I don't know what it is. It's just, they look gross. They're kind of hard. It just ruins bananas for me. I like bananas, but the bottoms of it, it's just what's going on down there? I can't handle it. I can't do it. It just upsets me too much.
What you don't know is I also hate the bottom of bananas. I cut off probably the bottom inch of the banana.
At least I'm not crazy. I'm the only person.
You're not. I promise.
I was pretty worried there for a bit. Everyone was just why don't you like the bottom? I don't know. I just can't do it.
No, man, I'm with you.
Okay, good.
Now, some of the answers we've gotten to the next question include freestyle rapping, cooking, and the like. What's one hidden talent about you that people might not know about?
A hidden talent? Ooh, never really been asked that before. I wouldn't say I'm a world-class chef, but I cook a mean fettuccine alfredo. My mom's part Italian, so I'm super into Italian dishes and all the carbs and the cheeses and stuff like that. So I'm a huge fan of cooking those kinds of dishes. Not a huge fan of the cleanup after, so I probably don't cook as much as I really should. But yeah, as far as a hidden talent, maybe I could probably beat most guys in the CFL at Rock Band. We bought it as a house a couple of days ago, and we've been crushing it pretty hard. So I think I could take on a lot of guys at Rock Band.
What's your go-to song, and what instrument do you play on Rock Band?
Oh, well, I play the drums, and I mean, go-to song, like, the library is so big. We actually just bought several Nickelback songs. Huge into Nickelback right now. Some 41 Fat Lip, great song.
Great tune.
But if I had to go with one song, I don't know. I can't pick one song. Can't do it. Too many great songs in there.
We'll go with Nickelback then.
There you go. There you go.
Now, to continue along with the tough questions, if you could sit down with one person, dead or alive, just chat with, who would it be, and what would your first question be?
Dead or alive, that's tough. There's a lot of I have a kind of like a list of people I would talk to for sure, but just one person, probably I think it would have to be Barack Obama, and my first question to him would be, how have you managed to accomplish so much in life when you started with so much adversity? I've always found his story pretty fascinating and interesting, and how he managed to climb the ranks all the way to president, you know, coming from like a single mother and stuff like that. So that's probably my go-to number one right now.
That would be a great conversation. I'd love to hear that. We'll make that happen someday.
Yeah, hopefully.
Now, you have some pretty awesome hair, albeit not on the Taylor Loeffler level. But really, to be honest, no one's on that level. But
come on, really?
Well, I mean, come on. He's got the mullet. Like, look at that thing. Now, but you've been growing your hair for 3 years for a fundraiser. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so my mom had breast cancer when I was a kid. My grandma had it 3 times and eventually died of it. Both my aunts had breast cancer. The one survived it and it's in remission and everything, and the other one's currently fighting it. So the hair kind of started as like a stupid little bet with one of the guys on my college team. And then I kind of, after a couple months of doing it, I'm just like, no, I don't know why I haven't ever done this. Like, I know like so many people in my life like have been affected by cancer. Like, I'm going to donate this. Like, I'm going to like do something. Like, growing up, I had to see my mom put on wigs because she lost all her hair. Like, I saw my aunt, I saw my grandma. Like, I know countless people that had to do the same thing. So I'm like, I'm going to donate this, and, you know, I'll try and raise some, use kind of like my platform and a little bit of, you know, where I am in life right now to raise some money for it as well. Cause, why not? Right. Just, it would help out cancer research in any way I can. And, you know, hopefully I can give, you know, my hair to someone that needs it a lot more than me. So that's kind of where it stemmed from and where I'm kind of trying to aim that to go currently.
Now, how can people donate to that?
There's actually a link in my Instagram and Twitter bio right now where it's just a GoFundMe page where people can just click on, donate, you know, however much they want. They can share it out to their friends on Facebook or Twitter or however they want it to do it. So it's pretty easy and straightforward there.
So I don't know if you know this about our show, but we have a segment called The Hottie Bowl. And earlier this year, we actually picked you as a Hottie Bowl member. How does that make you feel?
I'm honored. I guess I would say honored is kind of an understatement. You know, my girlfriend saw that and she's just like, honestly, I'm not sure whether to be upset or happy about this.
should be happy.
Yeah, I'm just like, just go with it. It's a good thing. So definitely, I was excited. I'm not sure if she was, but you know, these things happen.
Good.
it was good. It was funny. And my mom saw it and she laughed about it. So it was, I was just like, yeah, you know, I might not win all the awards here, but
Hey, but you're a Hottie Bowl.
So, you know, I'll take it. I'll take it right now.
Right on. So I've got two other players to pick from Winnipeg. Who thinks they're the hot crap in the locker room?
Okay, well, it depends what you're asking. Like, who thinks they're hot or who would I pick for the Hottie Bowl?
Both?
Both?
Okay. I say with a question mark? Yeah, whatever you want.
Okay, who thinks they're hot? Okay, I would say probably Taylor Loffler thinks he's hot. He's also my roommate, so I'm kind of biased and trying to razz him a little bit. And then, who else thinks they're hot? Probably go with Mo Leggett. Mo Leggett thinks he's hot.
Perfect, thanks. Thanks for the suggestions.
Yeah, don't worry, I got you
there. Finally, normally we ask everyone this, the most important question, dogs or cats, since you already touched on it, how much more dogs than cats?
Like, hands and above, like, no questions asked, dogs over cats. Couldn't even come close. The, you know, unbridled enthusiasm that dogs bring to your daily life, and, you know, no matter what happens, if you're ready to party, they're ready to party. They don't need context. If you're excited, they're excited. It's youthful enthusiasm that I feel like a lot of people kind of miss from their daily life, and a lot of positivity that dogs can bring to someone's life that I feel like a lot of people need that, you know, cats just can't match that. They can't compete with that, that positivity and that enthusiasm. It's impossible.
I think we all agree with you on dogs here, except for maybe Steve. But
I'm starting to lean that way now. My cat is a dick.
See? It only makes sense.
That's right. John, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on. It was a lot of fun.
Enjoy the game this Sunday, but don't have too much fun. You know, we're Rider fans and all, so we want you to do good, but not too good, okay?
Okay, all right, I appreciate that.
That was fullback John Rush of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers here on Engaging with the Enemy.
Coming up next, we have the Hottie Bowl and this week's Coney Island Poutine Cafe Piffles Player Profile, and much more. Stay tuned.
Piffles Podcast is supported in part by Bryn Werrett at Royal LePage Regina Realty. A longtime volunteer with your Regina Thunder, Bryn is a proud supporter of local football. Check out BrynWerrett.com, that's BrynWerrett.com, while you enjoy the rest of this episode of the Piffles Podcast. So let's talk a little bit about Hamilton again here for a minute. Not Art Briles, we've already done that, we're past that. How about the rest of their week? Could a week in the CFL have gone any worse for a team that can't lose this week?
You know that clip of Sideshow Bob stepping on rakes repeatedly? That is the Hamilton Tigercats this week. They could do nothing right, and they didn't even have to play. It's mind-boggling. The fact that, well, the Briles stuff, and then, oh yeah, so they worked out Johnny Manziel last week as well. Oh, and Austin is getting sued by Cornell. Like, what's next? Like, are they signing Khalif Mitchell? Because I want to know.
Well, you said it best on Twitter, and I couldn't put it better myself. It's like they took a look at last year's Saskatchewan Roughriders and how bad we were and how we kind of bungled things up and went, hold my beer. We got this. Let's show you how it's really done. Like, you can't... I don't think I've ever seen a worse week from a professional football team.
You're 0-8. You're switching quarterbacks. You're getting... obviously putting your $500,000 franchise quarterback on the trading block. Kent Austin is being sued by Cornell for leaving early and not paying. There was a $100,000 clause in that contract that if he were to leave early from his contract, he had to pay that back. And he apparently didn't pay it. It's been 14 months since he left.
And don't forget, Kent Austin was fired as head coach. Well, fired himself.
You know, step down, forced resignation, whatever you want to call it. And then the whole Johnny Manziel thing. Like, it's... there's literally nothing going right for this team right now.
My favorite part actually about that Cornell story is not the fact that... part of the reason why he kept on pushing back the paying back the Cornell is like, well, I can't sell my house. Finally, they got sick of waiting for their money. So it turns out the Hamilton Tigercats bought his house, and then they flipped it a month later for $170,000 less than what they paid for it. Like, could this team I feel like I need the Benny Hill music playing in the background as we talk about them.
They can't possibly do more, can they? Like, is there any... There's got to be... This has to be the bottom. Like, they have to have hit rock bottom. But we've said that a couple of times this week, and it more comes worse. Out. And more come... Like, I now feel like what it's like to look at the riders last year from an outside perspective and go, how does this keep happening?
The riders just broke a few minor rules. Like... And paid fines. That's nothing compared to what's going on in Hamilton.
And actually, to make the Brawl thing worse that we never talked about, they announced that signing on the same night they were doing a women's outreach night. And the sponsor of that thing basically said, okay, we are donating profits from our sales. And they have nothing to do with Tiger Cats. We're donating stuff with our sales to women's shelters because Hamilton and Tiger Cats completely muffed this.
I feel like there's somebody in LA right now going, you know, I was going to write a Bad News Bears football movie, but the Ticats just did it for me. Like, it's just...
It's so bad in Hamilton right now, and I can't imagine what their fans are going through, because we... Think of how we felt last year, being, oh my God, another thing, another Chris Jones thing, and how much the, you know, fans and other teams in this league were laughing at the Riders. And this is what's happening in Hamilton, but for completely different reasons. The Riders were just being stupid last year. This is very, very damaging to the organization in Hamilton.
And the worst part is, though, it's not that they... Last year, Chris Jones kept on playing off. He didn't know the rules. He didn't know this. He didn't know that. These guys are coming across like they're the smartest guys in the room and are completely tone deaf.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know what would be great? A couple weeks from now, I'm going to be in Hamilton for... the Riders at Hamilton game. I'm going to try and get a little bit of a, you know, feeling from the ground 2 weeks later. I want to see how their fans are handling.
Especially if they're 0-10 going into that game or whatever they'll be.
Yeah, they'd be 0-10.
They'd be 0-10.
Jeez.
But remember, when was the last time they won everything but one game? Who was that one loss
to? Oh, of course the Riders. That was against us and cost us a home playoff game in 2003.
It was in Hamilton.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't I tell you the other day that Hamilton's going to beat us?
Yep. We're going to be the 1-1-17 again.
Yep.
The one in behind 1-17. Yeah. All right.
I feel bad for their fans though, because they have some pretty good fans. We met a few when they were here last week.
Yeah, great fans.
And you know Josh from Podski. I listened to their podcast.
That was a great listen. I listened to that the other day.
It hurt to listen to that in the right way.
If you have time, at least the first 10 minutes, because it's. There's no production in that show. It was just Josh and Mike came out and they said their thoughts on the whole Art Briles thing and being a fan of the team. And it was real. It was from the heart. And it was hard to listen to, but it's a really good listen. And it really puts a lot of things in perspective. So if you get a chance, listen to that Podski Weeby. You can find it on 3 Down Nation. Just search Podski Weeby. You'll find it.
It's in my queue. I haven't listened to it yet.
Or if you want to find any of the shows, just go to @CFL or @CFPodNetwork. Find the rest of our shows of the Canadian Football Podcast Network across the country. But put that one at the top of your list, because
yeah, it's a really good listen.
And it was only 20-25 minutes.
Yeah, they threw everything out the window and just went with one story and
yeah, go for your walk at lunch for Grey Cup fit up and pop your headphones in and feel bad for them.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm getting depressed talking about Hamilton. Like, geez, this reminds me so much of last year and how just upset we were at the team. Anyway, let's get on with our show, move on from Hamilton, because they're bringing the fun down. Let's bring the fun back up here. Time now for the Hottie Bowl. I like you a lot, lot. All we want is hot, hot. Boys, boys, boys. You like boys and cars. Boys, look at those dance moves.
We're doing the thing now, huh?
Yep.
All right. Good thing I'm ready today.
It's not a tie cat, is it?
No.
Okay.
I have my paper sitting here. Why don't you just cheat off of it?
I like to be surprised.
Oh. Unlike Ferlin. He cheats off of it and posts pictures of it on the internet. All right. This boy, boy, boy. Why are you laughing at that?
I don't know. Same reason you laughed at me last week when I started singing it.
All right, that's fair. He was born November 20th, 1989 in a name in France that I can't say. Maybe it's Toulon. I don't know.
Toulon, France, yeah.
There you go. Toulon, France. He is the son of a soccer player originating from the Ivory Coast. I don't know what that means. In 2005, he rejoined his father in the U.S. to pursue his studies and play soccer. During his stay south of the border, he discovered American football, and I guess you can say the rest is history. His favorite actress is Angelina Jolie. Favorite video games, FIFA 15 and Call of Duty. I giggle because everybody's taking podcasting selfies right now.
I've already posted mine.
I started a trend.
Anyways, Karen.
Okay. Sorry. Distractions. His favorite football player is Adam, how do you say that?
Vinatieri.
These boys know who he is. He is 6 feet 4 inches, 225 pounds. He is number 14, Boris Beedy, kicker for the Montreal Alouettes.
You know, I'm really surprised you picked Boris Beedy for your kicker.
He's cute.
Justin Medlock?
He's cuter That's a than cute Justin kicker. Medlock.
Really?
I'll look up a picture, but yeah, I'm pretty sure.
You think Justin would be a med lock for a position?
Boo!
I'm saying my words with my eyes.
The people couldn't hear my eyes, so I had to boo you.
But yeah, hey. He's cuter.
Okay. Well,
who, hey. Boris or?
And he has a cooler name.
Boris.
I mean, come on.
And one Boris? Of them can kick.
It's not Boris.
No, it's not.
He's not bad by any means. Don't get me wrong.
Not anymore.
He had a terrible year last year, though.
Well, I mean, if we're comparing him to Justin Medlock, who's easily by far and away the best kicker in the league. Welcome.
This isn't a skills competition. Let's just put that out there.
He's got other high qualities that we're appreciating.
He's cute.
Here we go. Welcome to the Hottie Bowl.
Boris
Beedy.
Yeah.
Don't forget, you can get your Hottie Bowl merchandise at piffelspodcast.com. Check it out on the shop on the web. Check it out in the shop on the website. Stutter. Moving on. Time now for this week's Coney Island Poutine Cafe Piffles Player Profile. I really want to know. This week on the Coney Island Poutine Cafe Piffles Player Profile, we learn more about new defensive tackle, Nick James.
Nick, you've only been here a brief amount of time. How do you find Regina so far?
It's real relaxing, comfortable, man. I love it. Real home setting, and the fans are awesome.
Okay, now, do you find it hard to line up a yard off the ball coming from the States?
My first couple weeks it was, but now it's you know, I've been working on it, and it's in my mental rolodex, so I got it.
It's just football now, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, since you've been here, the defense has really kind of solidified itself with you wreaking havoc in the middle.
Right.
What do you attribute that to?
Just communication. I mean, the guys out there, they know what I can do, and, you know, I'm a big guy, and I like to do big things, so they help me do that. And, hey, man, as a whole, we've been getting it done. You know, Coach Jones has been doing a great job coaching us up, too.
Now, last week you blocked the convert that allowed Duron Carter to return the 2 points back.
Right.
Was that the first time you ever blocked a kick? And what went through your mind once you got your hand on it?
No, that's like my third block kick in my season. Well, in my career. And in my head, I was just trying to, you know, help the team out, man. And once I seen them had the ball, you know, that gave me, you know, it was a good dual accomplishment.
Were you looking for the kicker then, just to lay him right out?
I tried, and I missed, but, you know, maybe next time, this week coming up.
Now, how did you get into football in the first place?
Just family and friends, and just a lot of people just, hey, man, you're fast, you're big, you're explosive, come play football. So I've been playing football for about 16 years now.
Now, a little bit more about you. Describe to us what Nick James is like outside of the football world.
I'm just, you know, I'm still from Mississippi, so I'm a country boy, man, you know, just kick back and relax. And right now, I've just been in my playbook, so just trying to learn the system.
All right, now you get a chance to go anywhere in the world. Where do you go? What's the first thing you do?
Go back home and get a home-cooked meal from my mother.
What's the best home-cooked meal for mom?
Oh, man. Seafood Alfredo pasta.
Now, what's your best hidden talent that nobody here knows about?
I can play baseball.
What position?
Pitcher.
You hit good, too? Or?
Oh, yeah. I'm awesome.
Now, what's one thing that you would like Rider Nation to know about you?
I go hard. Well, you know what? I'm all gas, no brakes. You know?
Just the motor, nonstop motor.
Yeah, nonstop motor, man. Straight diesel.
All right. Now, I have to ask this because it's kind of come up in social media. Every time you make a play, people have been saying, I'm Nick James, bitch. Right. Now, I'm sure you probably hear that a lot. Does that make you hate Dave Chappelle because of that?
Oh, that's my buddy, man.
do you say that after a play? Do you look down? After you block the convert, did you look down and be like, yo?
Maybe next time I'll try it out. But, nah, man, sportsmanship on the field. But I do growl and bark, though. But that's it.
As long as you can back it up, right?
Yeah.
Now, we take a poll from all the players here, and it's the most important question that we ask anybody. Dogs or cats?
Dogs.
Why?
They can help me out when I really need the help.
Who's your hero?
Probably my pops, my dad, man.
How come?
I mean, he played a little Major League Baseball and came back and took care of me, and now I'm a professional football player.
Now, if you weren't a professional football player, what would you be doing?
If I wasn't?
Yeah.
Probably coaching.
Coaching D-line?
Of course, some type of defense.
And one final one for you. Where do you get your inspiration from? Not necessarily in sports, just in life.
Just God, man. I mean, I'm just getting these good feels, and I just try to live like the big man upstairs. So when I notice a little achievement, man, that's a big one to me. And that gives me this thrive to wake up the next morning. Let's somehow achieve another achievement. So, oh, yeah.
You know what? I do have one more for you. Right. Labor Day weekend, I'm not sure if you've been really introduced so far by the rest of the team about what Labor Day means up in Canada here.
Right.
But this is a pretty big game. It's going to be your first Labor Day game. What are you looking – what are you expecting out of this?
I'm expecting to play in this game and get all the fans riled up, man, and, you know, let's make this a great weekend, right, or day. Is it a day or the –
Oh, it's a whole weekend. It's like a big party. It's like opening kickoff of the NFL weekend. Like it's the big thing going on. So,
Hopefully this can be the birthday cake of the weekend. You know, the birthday party. You can put it like that. Yeah. This game. Can't wait to make some big time plays.
There was new defensive tackle Nick James here on the Coney Island Poutine Cafe Piffles Player Profile. And of course, if there's any player on the team you'd like to hear from, let us know. And if there's a question you'd like to ask them, tell us what it is, and we'll absolutely ask them for you. Finally, we have to do our Piffles Pick'em, so let's do that right now. This week, week 11, we got Ottawa at Montreal, Winnipeg at Saskatchewan, Edmonton at Calgary, and Toronto at Hamilton. Who wants to take lead? Actually, before I do, I should mention Ferland's picks, because he did send them in to us.
No, you skip the show, you go 1-4.
Noted.
He'll be in the graphic. He'll Ferland, be in the graphic.
Your points, your picks don't matter this week.
It's like, whose line is it anyway?
Yeah. He did pick Ottawa, Saskatchewan, Calgary, and Toronto.
Same.
Samesies.
I'm looking
that
for
leaves
mine.
You, Steve.
I'm going with. I was searching my picks.
Same time.
I was making sure that my picks matched my CF Pod Network picks and my Pick'em picks. I went with Montreal, Calgary, Hamilton, because I'm a moron. And for the good of Rider Nation, Winnipeg.
Which means the Riders will win. So all those picks are actually better for the Riders, including Calgary beating Edmonton. Because now we have a leg up in the season series on Edmonton if they go on a little bit of a slide.
So Hamilton, you believe June Jones when he says this is going to bring them all together?
No.
I can't pick Hamilton. I can't pick against Toronto this week because there's no way a Ricky Ray-led team scores zero offensive points again. And Hamilton's just a
tire fire.
It's going to go one of two ways for Hamilton. Either they're going to play lights out and put up points like you wouldn't believe, or they're going to have another performance like they've had against every single team this year so far and be 0-9. There's no in between, in my opinion.
Anyway, That's going to do it for us this week. Thank you so much for joining us. Next week's show, we're going to recap the Riders-Bombers Labor Day game and then preview the following Banjo Bowl game in Winnipeg. We'll have Engaging with the Enemy, another rant, another entrant into the Hottie Bowl, our Coney Island Piffles player profile, and more stuff.
More stuff.
And more stuff.
Don't forget to, after the game, check us out on the field, social media.
Yeah, we'll be live Periscope on Twitter after the game, so make sure you check that out. We'll share our immediate thoughts of the Riders' forthcoming victory over Winnipeg at the Labor Day Classic.
And perhaps next week, Ferland will not be sans here.
Maybe.
I don't know. This might be the best show ever.
Well, there was a week that Steve wasn't here, too. That was a good
show. That was a good one.
Yeah, but I called in for that one, though.
I don't know why I didn't cut that out.
That was with a guest.
Yeah, I guess so.
It'd be really weird if he answered questions he didn't hear. Well, it'd be kind of entertaining. Good old Troy Westwood.
Anyway, make sure you follow us on Twitter, at PifflesPod. You can follow me, at RealAlexD.
You can follow me, at Safamod.
You can follow me, at Craig on Sports.
And I am at CFL Hottie Bowl.
If for some reason you really want to follow Ferlin, I don't recommend it, but he's at Fernie635. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. We're on Instagram, just search PifflesPod. And make sure you check out the website, PifflesPodcast.com. Later on this week, I'm going to have a piece going up about Labor Day and what Labor Day means to me. So make sure you check that out. As always, the Piffles Podcast is brought to you by Bryn Werrett at Royal Page Regina Realty. Check out brynwerrett.com. That's BRINWERRETT.com. Thanks for listening.
We're a drinking town with a football problem.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.